You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, distinguished professor of English from the Brooklyn College, City University of New York, Eric Alterman will be here on his new book, Lying in State, Why Presidents Lie and Why Trump is Worse. Also on the program today, Democratic National Convention Night 1, light on policy and progressives, but does maybe achieve swaying John Kasich's family to vote for Joe Biden. Also on the program today, Tom Perez looks to eliminate Democratic caucuses. New report, scientists see lasting COVID immunity. That's good. DHS rejects the GAO's finding that Wolf and Cuccinelli are serving illegally. GOP begins to crack over the postal attacks. The joy to testify while his Senate patronage keeps some of those senators mum. Richie Neal tarnished by revelations that Massachusetts Democrats tried to hide their tracks in the Morse smear. States sue Oxy manufacturer Purdue for $2.2 trillion. And speaking of which, 12 billionaires now own more than $1 trillion in wealth. Meanwhile, names are released for the Republican convention. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, you thought things were weird last night. It's going to be a doozy. Donald Trump pardons Susan B. Anthony today because she's getting really big. It's also the anniversary of women's suffrage. And lastly, Andrew Cuomo to release a COVID leadership book. Possible working title, History Shall Not Absolve Me. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry, we had a little technical difficulties at the beginning of this. So got to move a little quick so that we can get to Professor Alterman. Just a little programming note. Oh, well, two things I want to say. One is, please don't call into the show prior to my taking phone calls, because then we have people on the phone for literally an hour and a half, before an hour before we go onto the show. It's very costly to have 20 people on the Twilio. Like, literally, we have to recharge it during the course of the show. So don't call in until the second half of the show, or if I explicitly say it's time for calls. Please help us out with that. Thank you. I appreciate that. Want to remind you, when do I get this here? Rave reviews about Nomi's pre-convention show yesterday, I should say, with Thomas Frank. I'm going to go back and look at that because I didn't have a chance to do it in the afternoon. But today at 3 p.m. on the Nomiki show, and you can find that on patreon.com, Nomiki show, or on youtube.com, the Nomiki show. And you got John Nichols, and then as our special guest, and then a panel with Larry Cohen, who is the chair of Our Revolution, former Bernie chair, a former president of the CWA union, and Jane Klebe, who is chair of the Nebraska Democratic Party. And Brent Wilder, a DNC rules member. So check that out. 3 p.m. Nomi show. I don't know. She had a good audience for that yesterday. So check it out. Meantime, let me do one read right now, if I could. As you know, we're home more than usual these days. You still got to keep a close eye on things. More deliveries means more boxes left unattended. More opportunities for packages to go missing. It happens, ladies and gentlemen. With Ring, you can keep your home safe no matter where you are. Ring gives you a protection at every corner. They got video doorbells that let you answer the door and check in on your home at any time. You can keep an eye on your doorstep, or you can speak to the delivery people when you can't come to the door. And they got outdoor security cameras. You can check on every part of your house. Never miss a moment. Smart lighting brightens up your blind spots. Make sure you can always come home to a brightly lit house. You want to watch on your pets? You can watch your pets. All sorts of different types of home security. And these, they have full home security systems that give you everything you need to protect your family. Like I say, your pets, your property, whatnot. The thing that they got that I have not seen any other company has that has this that I think is amazing, and I'm giving it to my buddy so we can watch some animals in his backyard, is a solar panel attached to the camera. Because one of the problems that you have when you have remote cameras is that the battery runs out. Solar power takes care of all that. But they also, Ring also has these great floodlights that also turn on when you, so they function both as floodlights and as video cameras. Nice to have security. Also fun to watch. You can get a special offer on the Ring Welcome Kit when you go to ring.com/majority. The Welcome Kit includes the Ring Video Doorbell, the Ring Video Doorbell number 3, and the Chime Pro. It's all you need to start building a custom security for your home today. This is the way to go, folks. Also helpful, if you're just making sure that maybe you are someone who is responsible for an elderly mom or an elderly dad. That happens, I can tell you. Very helpful. Just go to ring.com/majority. That's ring.com/majority. Also, very few silver linings I can find during this whole pandemic period, but it has given me an opportunity to spend some quality time with some of my family members. Specifically, I'm talking my daughter. And where do we do it? She was obsessed with those Dick Wolf shows? Law and Order. So we started playing Hunt a Killer. It's a new way to do game night. Gives everybody the opportunity to have fun, work together, investigate a crime without even having to leave the house. Hunt a Killer reinvents the way that we interact with murder mysteries. You go from being a viewer, safe, watching the boob tube, to an investigator who's actually involved in solving the case. It's a murder mystery subscription box. They send it to you on a monthly basis. They have over 2,000 five-star review on Trustpilot. With each delivery, you sift through, they send you documents, they send you some audio recording evidence, or the other types of evidence, case files. You could build a map. You build the whole thing with the cue card, not a map, but with the cue cards on your bulletin board. It's awesome. And if you so desire, you can join Hunt a Killer's spoiler-free online community. It has over 100,000 members, so you can share theories and help each other out. That's what I do with my kid. And it keeps her off the tablets for about 3 minutes. That's been the best thing about it, is that it's a fun thing. It's a fun game to do. It's sort of like it's serialized. So you stick with one crime essentially, and then you solve it, and then you move on to the next one. It's like True Detective, except you're the true detective. It's really fun. Right now, for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority. Use promo code majority at checkout for 20% off your first box. Head to huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off. Show your support for our podcast. That's huntakiller.com/majority. Let's play. I want to play this clip because it's apropos to our next guest, Eric Alterman, who has written now multiple books on presidential lying. Here is Donald Trump He's talking, well, I don't know if this is directly a lie because we have another one that's a lie. Should we just do the Gallup poll one? Let's play this clip. Here's Donald Trump. Since we have Eric Alterman on the program, we're going to bring him on in just a moment. He's written a book, Lying in State, Why Presidents Lie and Why Trump is Worse. This is part of it. The guy lies about everything and with a fluidity that is pretty stunning. What clip number is this?
This is 7.
This is 7. This is Donald Trump. He's going around, I don't know, giving people COVID, I guess. This is where, is he in the White House here?
Yes.
Okay, this is not when he was in Wisconsin. All right, so here he is. There's Donald Trump desperately trying to justify his COVID response. Remember, for like a number of months, he refused to wear a mask because it was it would ruin his makeup or something. And then, but prior to that, he was just denying that this thing was real. And here he is defending his COVID response by attacking Barack Obama with a poll that doesn't say what it says, what he says it says.
Well, they got very bad reviews. If you look at the Gallup poll, Gallup poll did a review of them. Now, you have to understand that was a far lesser vicious disease. It was not the same in the same ballpark. But
pause it for one second. Pause it for one second. The question they're asking is, what about how people responded to Barack Obama versus yours? Go ahead.
In the same ballpark, but I know it's also a much lesser disease, but they got very bad reviews. Gallup gave very bad reviews. And by the way, Gallup at that same time gave us very, very good reviews for the job we've done. So if you take a look at the Gallup poll from a couple of months ago, we got very good reviews and they got very bad reviews. They were the reviews they got for the handling of swine flu or H1N1, which Biden calls N1, H1, and I don't even correct him on that. I don't even correct him. I said, well, that's a mistake you can make, but that's what he calls it. He's got it a little mixed up, but that's all right. Take a look at the Gallup poll, and there were others too. They got horrible marks. And that disease is a much lesser problem. Okay.
Mr. President, do you support protesters in Belarus? And do you have a message?
Do I support protesters and terrorists?
Belarus.
Oh, I support protesters and terrorists.
Yeah, what's Belarus? Just for the record, I mean, of course, Gallup showed at the time that 66% approved of the Obama administration's handling of H1N1, which is actually sort of stunning because I would imagine there was at least 40% of the country that would not give him approval on anything. And of course, Trump cites his Gallup poll from 3 or 4 months ago, but Gallup now shows only 36% approve of Trump's response to coronavirus. And the surveys reveal even lower numbers. But Donald Trump is a pathological liar. That would be a great question to ask our next guest, the distinguished professor of English from Brooklyn College City, University of New York, the liberal media columnist for The Nation, and author of over 10 books. Eric Alterman will be right with us with Lying in State, Why Presidents Lie and Why Trump is Worse. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program for I don't know how many times. I mean, he's been on the show since the very first iteration of the Majority Report over 15 years ago now. He is the Distinguished Professor of English, Brooklyn College, City University of New York. He is the author of over 10 books. And he is the liberal media columnist for The Nation. His latest, Lying in State, Why Presidents Lie and Why Trump is Worse. Eric Alterman, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure to speak to you again.
Eric, let's just start with this. I think probably the first time I interviewed you was probably about your book in 2004, which was When Presidents Lie, History of Official Deception and Its Consequences. So the concept that Donald Trump would lie as president is not necessarily new. Why revisit this topic?
Why did I write this book?
Yes, sir.
I like that question. I went away with my daughter for my birthday in January 2017. My birthday is in January. And the weather was really bad where we were. And so I managed to get through all of Ron Chernow's 800 or 900 page biography of the Warburg family, which were.
Oh, Eric? Eric, whatever you just did, we just lost you. Eric, are you there? Oh, gosh. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll try and figure this out. Be right back after this. Ladies and gentlemen, sorry about that. So, Eric, my question to you was, having written When Presidents Lie, History of Official Deception and Its Consequences back in 2004, when we probably first spoke, why revisit that topic?
Yeah, well, I started to tell a long story. You guys really not get any of it?
Well, I know that you. I know that you said that you went on vacation with your daughter for your birthday, which is in January.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, I missed that. And you start to read
I'm still waiting for your present.
Well, I'm still trying to pick out something nice. But you said that you started to read a biography.
Yeah, of the Warburg family by Ron Chernow. And the Warburg family were the wealthiest, after the Rothschilds, they were the wealthiest Jewish family in the world, I think, certainly in Europe. They were German Jews. And the book was like 800 pages, and there's like at least 100 pages of the Warburg family telling themselves, Hitler's not going to be so bad. He's not as bad as he sounds. We can make it through this. And of course, that turns out to be completely false. And about half to a third of them were killed in the Holocaust. And I wasn't thinking that Donald Trump was Hitler. And certainly the United States is not Weimar or Nazi Germany. But I was thinking we're in a brand new situation. Anything could happen. We have no idea how bad it will be. And I did have the impression then, which I think has been confirmed, that our democratic institutions were much weaker than we assumed that they were, and that they could not withstand much pushback. And I thought to myself, well, when I have grandchildren someday, or when I'm on my deathbed, what will I say when people say, what did you try and do about Donald Trump? And I thought, well, lying in politics, lying in presidential lying is something I know better than anybody else in the world, probably, because I did my dissertation on it, and I wrote a 400-page something book on it previously. Why don't I write a book about how Donald Trump fits in the context of other presidential liars? So I went back to George Washington, which is very different than the book I published in 2004, and I looked at all presidents. I read a biography of every single one, at the very least. And then I tried to put Trump's lying in context, and that's this book.
So you go through lies that start with just, I guess, even Jefferson in terms of what I guess.
I actually start with Washington at a funny moment at a party at Robert Caro's house where I went up to Chernow and I said, you know, Washington lied. He goes, yeah, no, I know. Shit. Oh, I'm sorry. Darn. I learned that from your book.
That's funny. All right, so you start with Washington, you go Jefferson, you go through the ages of the major lies that presidents tell. How would you categorize the how are the lies that, you know, Roosevelt tells or Truman tells or Eisenhower or Kennedy or Johnson or Jefferson and Washington, Nixon? How are those lies? Well, I'm what's the taxonomy of these lies? How are they qualitatively different?
Stop there. Let me answer that question.
Yes, sir.
For the first 150 years or so of the country, they were, first of all, most politicians lie. And just like you can't get lies, you can't get money out of politics entirely, you can't get lies out of politics. It's a question of degree. And also it's a question of, like, depending on your society, what kind of lies are the kind of lies that are demanded. In the first 150 years of this country's history, there were two kinds of lies that presidents almost had to tell. It was very rare that they could get away without lying about these two topics in one way or another. The first was white supremacy. The country's built on white supremacy. It stuck with white supremacy up until, you know, the 1970s. In some ways, it still does. And yet, we have a Declaration of Independence that says all men are created equal, and we teach our school children that all men and women are created equal. And yet, we had slavery for a very long time. Black people weren't allowed to vote for a very long time. We treated the Native Americans as if they did not exist and wiped them out when they got in the way. And so presidents had to lie about anything having to do with non-white people, because it was just not consistent with the myth that presidents needed to pretend to live by if they wanted to be in the mainstream American culture. The second lie, which is connected to the first lie, is a lie about expansion, then about empire, and thirdly about national security, although these are all the same thing. The United States started expanding immediately upon its founding, first under President Adams, enormously so under President Jefferson, and then again, just as enormously so under someone who doesn't get the credit or blame that he deserves for the effectiveness of his president, James K. Polk. And the country increased its size by about a third under Jefferson, by about another quarter to a third under Polk. And then, they lied about it. In fact, the hero of the Polk story is actually Abraham Lincoln, who decided not to run for re-election because he was so dogged as a congressman for calling out Polk's lies. It's a great story. And then, around the turn of the century, it became clear that, that North America had no more room for American expansion. That's the great article, the thesis by historian Frederick Jackson Turner about the end of the frontier. And at the same time, the country had adopted the ideology of manifest destiny, which meant that our Christian capitalist civilization was the best civilization in the world, and we'd be doing everyone else in the world a favor if we helped them to see that, even if it meant killing them in order to impose it on them. So we started expanding overseas in the Philippines, in Latin America, and we created an empire. But again, we weren't going to allow the non-white people in these places to become citizens, and we weren't going to give them a vote. Puerto Rico still doesn't have senators. So there were a lot of lies involved. First, over the fact that we were not behaving democratically, and second, over the fact that we were, in fact, creating an empire. When you get past the World War One and Two into the Cold War, or after the Cold War, into the Cold War, then the empire becomes, translates into the term national security. And so we start overthrowing governments left and right, and denying rights at home in order to protect our quote-unquote national security, when almost never is our actual national security, as we would understand the term in plain English, ever threatened. It's about the Cold War and the need to protect our empire. And this empire, national security, has forced presidents to lie. Even presidents who hardly ever lie, Jimmy Carter, Barack Obama, still get caught up a little bit in that. By telling things that they know are not true because the empire demands that national security defense. Happy Bill Clinton, too, who, surprisingly to me, and maybe to your listeners, doesn't lie at all. I mean, he certainly lied about not having sex with that woman, Monica Lewinsky. But he was remarkably truthful with most affairs having to do with the presidency and stuff.
All right, so Eric, let me just stop you for a minute and just go back. So you say that they're compelled to lie by that the requirements of empire, at least when we're talking, let's say that moves into national security and it becomes a little bit still empire, but it becomes just a slightly different variant of it, I guess. They're required to lie because of there's two different parts about this, right? Like one is the compulsion. I mean, if Lincoln can call out Polk's lying, then it suggests that there's some wiggle room as to how compelled Polk was to have to lie, right? Because presumably Lincoln, even as a congressman, is under similar constraints as Polk. Correct? I mean, in terms of like, if they're doing this because they think it's for the best of the country.
Well, that's quite a constraint. You know, I don't think there's been a single president that hasn't convinced himself that it's necessary to do.
You're breaking up a little bit, Eric. I'm sorry. You're breaking up a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Are you on a cell phone?
I'm on a cell phone, but I have a mic and I have a headset.
Yeah, maybe the headset. Maybe try take the headset off. Sorry, folks.
Is this any better?
Oh, my gosh. So much better. So much better.
Okay. You guys told me to put on the headphones.
Well, Brendan is in big trouble for that. All right. So, Eric, so, okay. So, I mean, why is it that Lincoln is not compelled to accept those lies and Polk is...
Lincoln decided that he'd rather get to the truth than be reelected, and his advisor said, "Don't do this," and he did it anyway, knowing that he would lose his seat if he did, and he did lose his seat. So, if a politician's job is to win elections, then he did the wrong thing.
All right, fair enough. And that nature of the lie that Polk and others are talking about as a way of that is necessary to execute expansion and imperialism, right? That you need to completely deny the humanity of the people that you are conquering, killing, enslaving.
Well, you need to say that you're actually doing them a favor. You know, It's the old line from Vietnam, we destroyed the village in order to save it. You actually say you're doing it for them, not for you. It's unselfish on your part.
So is this a also like, because I'm just trying to set us up for what is in the maybe American psyche, maybe human psyche, that needs to have this sort of delusion that, I mean, right? I mean, it wasn't that hard. I mean, maybe it was hard. I don't know. I mean, is it really that hard to sort of like, to realize that like, wait a second, destroying the village to save it. That doesn't seem to make sense to me. but I mean, is there just that much of a compulsion for, to be self-deluded?
Yes. I mean, look, everybody wants to think they're a good person and not everybody is. Sam, are you a liar?
I mean, of course.
Of course. Okay, well, most people, I admire your honesty, but most people don't think of themselves as liars. They say, oh, every once in a while I might lie for good reason. But people lie all the time. I think men lie on average something like 7 times a week, and women lie 3, maybe 4 times a week.
I do closer to 4, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, you have a strong feminine side.
Thank you.
But women, by the way, this will be a shock, that women lie to assuage people's feelings and men lie to build themselves up on average. But anyway, it's the job of the president to make the country feel good about itself, to make its citizens feel good about themselves. Nobody wants a president like, you know, Jimmy Carter was considered to be a scold because he talked about our, he didn't use the word malaise, but that's what he meant. And the presidents have to say, this is a good country. We're a good people. Every president says that. And yet the empire demands that we do things that are morally indefensible on their face. And if you can either say, in order for us to be good, we have to do things that are morally indefensible. Well, that's a kind of a complicated argument to make. Instead, you say we're doing good things because we're good people and whatever we do is good. And that's an easy argument to make. And that's the argument that virtually all presidents have made. I think as far as anyone has gone, I remember that Bill Clinton's inauguration. And he said, there's nothing wrong with America that can't be fixed with by what's right with America. And that's about as far as a president I can think of going, saying that there's anything wrong with America at all. Until Trump, of course.
Right. Okay. And so that takes us to Trump. And his lying is like different in nature or different in I mean, his lying is qualitatively and quantitatively different.
It is both. Yes, well said. I'm gonna hold on to it and use it. It's obviously quantitatively different because he's told, according to the Washington Post, count over 20,000 lies in his first 3 years and a few months. I actually to clarify a little bit, I like Daniel Dale's count better than the Washington Post. Daniel Dale, I don't know if do you follow his Twitter feed, Daniel Dale?
No, I don't.
Well, may I recommend that you do?
Okay.
It's the single best Twitter feed I know of. Daniel Dale was hired away from the Toronto Star by CNN. And by the way, I've never even met the guy. I've never heard the guy. I mean, we've never spoken. I've never communicated with him. But, He does his own. He was hired just to cover Trump's lies. That's what he's doing at Toronto Star. He does it all by himself, but he does it in context. He says, this is the 300th time that Trump has told this lie. And he says, every time Trump says the word sir, you know he's lying.
Every time, sorry, you're breaking up a little bit again. Every time that Trump says the word sir?
Yeah, if Trump tells you a story and someone calling Trump sir, that means Trump's making it up.
Oh, so when in the story where someone addresses him as sir, that's a tell of his lie.
You know, it's a lie. That's just one of many, many, many examples. Anyway, the point is that there's no one close to the 20,000 lies. Now, 20,000 falsehoods. Now, that's what gets us to the qualitative difference.
The qualitative difference is this. Other presidents, take Lyndon Johnson as an example, who was also kind of a pathological liar in private life. But when he lied as president, he lied for the goal of trying to defend his Vietnam policy, which got off on the wrong foot when he found out that he lied about the Golden Gulf incident. He had to keep lying so that he wouldn't be humiliated and look like he was a tough guy and pretend that we were winning because we had never lost a war. He had good reasons to lie, even though they were in some degree his own fault. He was lying in pursuit of a goal. Trump just lies. He just lies. No goal, no nothing. Everything is Vietnam is Trump, and everything is working out just about as well as Vietnam did. The story that I find so curious is Trump had a meeting with Justin Trudeau where they were discussing America's trade deficit with Canada, and Trump was bitching about it. And he said that we had a trade deficit, I don't know, in milkers. I think it's the exact thing. And Trudeau said, no, we don't. And Trump said, yes, we did. And then
I'm sorry.
Arrived.
I'm sorry. Eric, I missed that. You broke up a little bit when you said Trump said that we have a what?
Trade deficit.
Right. Okay.
On some product. Let's say it's milk. Anyway, the point is that right after Trump had his meeting with Trudeau, he went to the press and he said, I lied about this trade deficit. Like, what was the point of lying in the meeting if you're going to come out and say I lied? What is the point of Trump having a summit with all these European leaders that they've all attended and then coming out in the press conference with all of them right there and lying about what was said and what was agreed to? He doesn't lie. The only reason he lies is because he wants to win the next minute, and top 5 minutes. He's all about the next 5 minutes. Other presidents have lied with a goal in mind. Even Nixon lied about a lot of things. He was lying because he was trying to achieve some policy, and he probably knew what the policy was. He was lying, but you understood what he was lying for. Trump just lies and lies and lies and lies with no particular purpose.
Is that what?
He doesn't care that you know that he's a liar.
Is that what we call a pathological liar?
Absolutely, he's pathological, but it works. Trump is a genius, and by genius, I don't mean that he's all intelligent, but he has this instinctive genius for how to manipulate the media to drive them crazy and to get them to report things on his terms, even though if you stop the reporter and say, wait a minute, does that make any sense at all? They go, no, that's not my job. So he's been able to control our discourse to an enormous degree at the same time spouting nonsense nonstop. I never would have predicted this. I watched Donald Trump, as I'm sure you did, growing up. You know, he's been around forever. He's a little bit older than we are, and he can never avoid the guy. And yet I never would have suspected he could have been this successful with the nonsense that he peddles. It's phenomenal. It's a real indictment of our culture and of our media.
It's interesting. The most insightful, I think, a thing I've read or just theory around Trump, that I've seen, over the past 4 years, I guess, and I cannot remember her name, Matt, maybe you can remember, but she had written a book about mesmerism in this country. And
mesmerism?
What was it? Mesmerism. Yes.
I never heard of it.
Matt, what was the name of the book? It was about this.
The credulity
in America where mesmerists would go around and, you know, basically, lie to people, and the, people would become enthralled because they felt like they were on the inside. They knew that and she described, it was credulity, a cultural history of U.S. mesmerism. And it's Emily Ogden. And
wow, I wish I'd known about this.
Yes, you would enjoy this, actually. And she made the point that that the audience, they know that the guy is a liar, but they feel that they're on the right side of that lie. that person is lying on their, you know, for their benefit, or that they're in on the lie on some level. And so they're okay with it. They can't be 100% sure, but that is why when we hear, you know, people say like, yes, he's, He's this, he's that, he's this and that. It's just that they feel that he has the ability to make it feel like he's doing it on their behalf. So when he comes back and says, I've lied to Justin Trudeau, it's now he's not lying because he thinks he's going to achieve anything other than make people feel like, eh, good. When Donald Trump lies to Justin Trudeau, it's like, I lied to Justin Trudeau and look at me. I just lied to a Canadian prime minister and he bought it. You know, I think it's really just a question of power, right? I mean, it's just a question of in that moment, it is Donald Trump showing that, like, look what I can do. Doesn't matter if you think that what I'm saying is true. And it is an exertion of power in that moment.
Very interesting, Sam. Very interesting. The way I address that question is from, you know, you might recall in the introduction, I talk about four kinds of lies. Misinformation, disinformation,
I'm sorry,
BS.
You broke up again. Repeat that for folks. You broke up. Sorry.
Okay. There's four kinds of political presidential lies that I identify. Misinformation, where you just make a mistake. Disinformation, where you purposely tell people something that's false. Am I allowed to say a curse word in the philosophical sense?
Yes.
On purpose?
Yeah. Yes.
So bullshit in the philosophical sense, as defined by the Princeton University philosopher, Harry Frankfurt, is a lie where you just don't care what the truth is. You just say whatever you want because it's convenient. Trump does all of these things. But the one that I learned about that I didn't know about, which is very interesting, which is relevant to what you're saying, is a philosophical term called the bald-faced lie. Sometimes they call it bold-faced, but I think bald-faced is better. And a bald-faced lie is a lie where the person being lied to knows they're being lied to. And so it's not clear that you're trying to misinform or disinform them. You're in on it with them as a kind of conspiracy. And therefore, the problem with bald-faced lies, you don't know if a person's in on it or not because people don't say, yes, I like being lied to. Yes, I know it's a lie. They need to pretend to believe it. This is what Fox News is all about. It's one bald-faced lie after another, where sometimes the people know that they're being lied to and sometimes they don't. Like, you know, if you look at surveys of Republicans, well, most Republicans think you should wear a mask, but they like being told not to wear a mask and how masks are a communist plot by Anthony Fauci on Fox. Because, as you said, they like the power. They like sticking it to the lips. They like they just like this guy. He's on their side. And so they're happy to hear his lies. It makes them feel good. But the problem is you can't tell what they believe and what they don't believe because no one will say, yes, I know he's lying. It's a real conundrum. And as I said, Trump does all of these things. You give me an example, you know, ask me for examples. I could give you one for all of them. Bullshit is maybe the most common of them. But these bald-faced lies, the press doesn't know how to deal with them at all because they don't know if they should report them. They don't know. You know, there was a defender of Trump in the very beginning, their campaign, I guess, in the Atlantic, who wrote, "Reporters pay too much attention to what he actually says, whereas his supporters are listening to what he means." But nobody knows what he means really, because it's all so contradictory and so crazy. But they know, at least they think they know, that he's on their side, but he's not on their side because he's screwing them on behalf of billionaires and his friends. But rhetorically, he's on their side. So, you know, it's like the best example of this is evangelicals. He has contempt for evangelicals. That's why he screws porn stars when his wife just had a baby and stuff. He doesn't have an issue with them, but he's on their side politically, and he beats up the people that they want beat up, and he praises them, and so they think that he's on their side, and they stick by him. And
well,
is there anything you can say to that?
I mean, he's on their side from a material standpoint. I don't know that they actually. I think their perspective towards politics is probably pretty good. I don't think they care what's in his heart so much as they have a narrative that explains that, you know, God can send a, you know, a bad messenger to deliver a good message, and he's doing it. And he has done more for evangelicals probably than, I don't know, any modern president that I can name. But
well, definitely. Just this morning, he said he was surprised that the evangelicals are much happier with his policy towards Israel than the Pews are.
I got that clip. That is stunning, because that is the most truthful expression of the support for Israel in this country that I have heard by anybody not on a YouTube channel or, you know, a professor.
Well, actually, you know, when I started this book, I put aside the book I was contracted to write, which is a history of the Israel-Palestine debate in the United States. And I'm back to writing it now. I've been working on it.
Well, like I said, a professor, an esteemed professor. But you know, when I just want to get back to bald-faced lies, because one of the scariest moments for me during the Trump era, or the one that sticks out for me, was when Brett Kavanaugh was talking about, I mean, this is a very minor point about Brett Kavanaugh, but when he was in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he was talking about what was written, and I off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly what it was, about a woman in his, was it Renata or something? A woman, maybe it was in his yearbook or something like this. And it was clearly like a frat boy offensive, dehumanizing thing about this woman that he said was, oh yeah, Renati alumni or something. And he said it was an homage. And I just thought, like, every single person in that room knows that he's lying. His wife knows he's lying. His kids, his grown kids know he's lying. Every senator who's sitting on that panel knows he's lying. Every journalist, every single person in that room knows he's lying about that. Nobody says a word. And that just struck me as like, that's the first example we're seeing of someone specifically using Trump's skill sets to move forward. And I thought, like, now the dam's open, we're going to see this everywhere. And we've seen it on, you know, maybe in some limited fashions, but that was the most explicit version of it. Like, where everybody was like, everybody in that room knew he was lying and nobody said a word.
I think we need to give credit to the Republican Party for empowering this kind of lying over a period of time. I mean, Ronald Reagan, Newt Gingrich, and then of course the contemporary guys like, you know, the leader of the Senate, they sometimes lie, but usually they just won't take a position on lying. I have a section in the book where their leaders of the party are consistently asked whether or not Barack Obama was born in this country. They read Trump's statements where he was doing his birther nonsense, and they won't say. The answer is, I'm not going to tell people what to believe. If they want to believe he was born in Kenya, more power to him. And so you ended up in an election where a majority of Republicans believe that Trump was born in Kenya, where a significant minority of Republicans believe that Hillary Clinton was running a pedophile ring inside Comet Pizza in Washington. And if you add up these things, you get in a situation in which Hannah Arendt, writing about totalitarianism, said this is what dictators aim for, where there's no such thing as facts. And you can get away with anything if there's no such thing as facts. I mean, really, running a pedophile father, hundreds of millions of people believing that, it's ridiculous. And yet the media, for a variety of reasons, the members of the mainstream media are unable to deal with this level of nonsense. The thing that dawned on me, you had a what people call an aha moment with Kavanaugh. I had an aha moment watching the 2016 debate between Trump and Clinton, where one of the questioners said to Trump, "Dude, do you really think that global warming is a plot by the Chinese to destroy America's manufacturing base?" And Trump said, "I never said that. I never said it. Repeatedly, I never said it." He had said it hundreds of times. And it was right there, but he didn't care. And he was right not to care because he won the moment. He won the moment, and that's all that mattered. And he's won the moment after moment after moment after moment after moment. This is why, I'm sorry, I'm going on and on here, but
no.
This is why I think it's so important. This is why I like Daniel Dale better than the Washington Post on fact-checking. We need, when Trump lies, when all politicians lie, we need the lie challenged at the time of the lie. We need our cable guys and our reporters to say this is false. Not there's no evidence for this, or Democrats say maybe something different. This is false. It's not enough to say, oh, by the way, yesterday he said something that was false in a different story. But the lie lives on and on and on. It's not enough to tweet, oh, Trump said this, and then later say in the story somewhere it was false. They're participating in the destruction of our language and allowing, I don't know what you call it, definitely authoritarianism, possibly neo-fascism, to arise in the midst of confusion.
One thing that occurred to me as to why the media was incapable, has been incapable, and you know, maybe there's been some spotty changes, like say, but broadly speaking, incapable of executing what you just suggested, was that there were lies that were far more respectable that I feel like the press never questioned for years. I mean, just things like, you know, I don't know, Paul Ryan saying that, you know, or Ronald Reagan saying, you know, cut taxes will raise revenue, right? Like there was no evidence for that. We've seen perfect examples of where that has completely fallen on its face. Paul Ryan could get out there and say all sorts of just ridiculous. I mean, it wasn't as like sort of absurd. It was just there were lies about things like the deficit and whatnot that people knew were lies. And that were even less contentious than global climate change, for that matter. But because they're said in a respectable manner, they weren't even remotely close to calling these things out. And I guess my concern is that I have a two-part concern, and I know that at least part of it is you share this. Donald Trump, fortunately, knock on wood, let's hope that he doesn't get reelected, because then I think we're in a different sort of zone. But Donald Trump is also particularly incompetent. But there are, you know, there's like the second mover advantage that people have, right? Like Tom Cotton's looking at this and saying like, this I can get away with, that I can't. This I can get away with, that I can't. I mean, there's an opportunity here. If Brett Kavanaugh can adopt that just sort of bald-faced lying, I'm quite sure that others can too. And there's a second mover advantage, that the next guy, probably a guy, who comes in with this attitude, that that our body politic and our society just does not know how to deal with this whatsoever.
Look, read the conclusion of my book. There's the building blocks of an American form of fascism here. The democracy is probably not going to be able to survive a second term with Donald Trump. It's proven weak in so many ways. We haven't, as generous as you are with your time, we've only scratched the surface of all the different ways that Trump's lies have weakened our political system. And another 4 years of its assault, both on the system, on a system government, but also on the press itself, will mean, I think, the end of anything you can call democracy in this country.
What does that mean? The end of democracy? I mean, what does that mean? Because I mean, you know, like I'm trying to figure out where
what it means. Is that we will have the form of democracy with none of the content. If they're able to rig the elections through voter suppression and rig the census and you know, screw up the whenever they need to, then most of the people in the country will be disenfranchised because, you know, that's in part a function of the way our system is set up. And if most of the people in the country are disenfranchised and they have very little representation in Congress and in the courts, then the Republicans can do whatever they want to people. They can, you know, we were upset when they were putting kids in cages and separating families, but they kept doing it. They got away with it. You know, when Puerto Rico had the hurricane, we were upset that Trump went over there and handed out paper towels, but nothing was done for these people because they don't vote for the Senate. They have no representation. And if they vote in presidential elections, they're still Democratic. We have Jared Kushner on record saying, let's not worry about the COVID in places that are run by Democrats because they'll be blamed. Well, this is how all the entire government will be ruled, with absolutely no concern for the good of the country. It'll just be to build the power of the individuals who are paying for it and supporting it. And by the time we're done, there'll be nothing left. There'll be nothing we could do.
Let me ask you this. I mean, haven't we had voter disenfranchisement for the better part of our entire existence, right? I mean, up until 1965, we had a massive voter disenfranchisement. We still have...
The majority wasn't disenfranchised. The minority was, number one. And number two, up until Ronald Reagan and Newt Gingrich and certainly Donald Trump, we had a relatively responsible elite that governed within rather narrow goalposts in terms of what was acceptable and what wasn't. And it was very bad for people who were left out of the conversation, like black people. But there was definitely a sense of limits. And you saw that with Nixon. Nixon could only go so far, and he was forced to resign. Those limits have been removed. Trump is doing all kinds of things that would have been unthinkable in those years. So we're in far more danger now as a result of the voter disenfranchisement than we ever were before.
So is that the threshold for democracy when the majority of people are disenfranchised? I mean, I think it's, you know, arguable. I mean, you look at like a place like, you know, Wisconsin, where people vote for Democrats in the state house, I don't know, 55-45, and yet Republicans control 60% of the state house. You could argue that with the Senate too, right? I mean, the federal Senate now.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Structurally, we have a real problem, and we have a decidedly imperfect, dysfunctional democracy, even when it works the way it's supposed to. That I wrote about this in that little book we once talked about, Bootie Democracy, the System versus Barack Obama, that we had elected a president who wanted to be aggressive, but the system could not contain that for all these reasons. That's true, but I'm saying there's a tipping point tipping into authoritarian / fascism. I wasn't talking that way then. I was nervous to be talking about it when I wrote the book, but since actually I finished the book in January, it looks a lot, so that argument looks a lot stronger.
Indeed. Well, the book is Lying in State, Why Presidents Lie and Why Trump is Worse. Eric Alterman, always a pleasure. We will put a link to that book at majority.fm.
Thank you so much, Sam. I always enjoy talking to you, and I'm here for you.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Eric. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Folks, just want to apologize for the technical difficulties we had during there, but interesting stuff, so I want to hang with it. Alterman is a very nimble thinker, as it were, Dr. Alterman. Longtime listeners will recall the time where Janine Garofalo and I were hosting the radio iteration of this show at the Aspen Comedy Festival back in, I think it could have been 2004, maybe 2005. And Eric Alterman was there. Not sure why. He's a fan of comedy. And he sat down with us and then proceeded to send back a drink that he had gotten with a waitress on air, our radio program, which, you know, these days in podcasts, not that big of a deal. But back in the day, you're doing a radio show and it's on, you know, drive time in L.A. and in New York and Chicago and Miami, and a guy, your radio, like, 3 minutes of your radio time is taken up by somebody complaining about the drink that they had and sending it back. That was one of the highlights of my radio career, frankly. And then, of course, we had a ongoing many years where Alterman would specifically eat during the interview on the phone. And so many times, sometimes he would have dessert, sometimes he would have a sandwich or something like that. That was back in the day. Check out Eric Alterman's books, ladies and gentlemen. There's a lot to learn, particularly in terms of like the relationship with society and the media. Working the refs, I think, was his, he coined that phrase in the context of the media. And it's a different era of the media, but still a dynamic that takes place. Hey, just want to remind you that I'm very excited to introduce you to one of the coolest sponsors we've ever had, Hunt a Killer. It's a murder mystery subscription box. It's one of the most unique games out there, and it brings the fun of an escape room, which you cannot go to now, to your home. So check it out. Go to huntakiller.com/majority. Use the promo code majority at checkout for 20% off your first box. That's huntakiller.com/majority with promo code majority. Also, want to remind you, Blinkist. It takes the key insights from over 3,000 nonfiction bestsellers in over 27 categories and condenses them down into blinks. And these blinks you can listen to or you can hear or you can read. 15 minutes, read or listen to them. It also offers its members exclusive original podcasts from top authors and creative thinkers. Check it out. Go to Blinkist.com/majority report. Start your 7-day free trial and then get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership and up to 65% off of audiobooks. And these audiobooks you get to keep forever, folks. Very excited about Nomi's show today, covering the DNC. Nomi, this is a perfect time. I can't wait to talk to you about the convention last night, what your thoughts are about it. Yesterday, you had on your program, Thomas Frank, which you are running now for an hour at 3 p.m., right after this one, on patreon.com, the Nomiki Show.
On YouTube. But if you want to be a patron, go to Patreon. We're doing it live.
You get it. Speak. Why can't I hear?
Something going on with a mic?
Is she low or is that me?
That's you.
That's you.
Me?
Ah.
Yeah.
Why is everybody low for me now? Uh-oh. It's so strange. Oh, I know why. Okay. I just fixed it. Sorry. It's one of those days. And today on the program, John Nichols, and then you have a killer panel too. Is that right?
Yeah, we have. So John Nichols is going to talk about conventions in the past, but specifically he's going to hone in on Henry Wallace and how he was kicked off the ticket with FDR and the similarities between Bernie and Henry Wallace's progressive leadership. And then we have a panel with former CWA president, Our Revolution chair, former Bernie Sanders campaign chair, Larry Cohen, Jane Klebb, who is the founder of Bold Nebraska. She's the chair of the Nebraska Party, a progressive force of nature, and Brent Welder, who was just on the Rules Committee and proposed to get corporate money and lobbyists out of the party, and that was shut down. So it'll be really interesting. The first half of the week is really about the mechanics of the DNC. The second half is like, how do we organize and build in the future under a Biden presidency or a Trump presidency?
That's great. That is that's super important at this stage. I mean, we'll talk more about the convention afterwards because I did watch most of it last night.
Yeah.
So that was not
that's
easy.
That's why you're tired today.
That it was not easy. But we will discuss more. But folks, the real way to watch this convention is to watch Nomi's show at 3 p.m. for an hour. So you know what to look for when you're going in it and you know what they're trying to do and you know why they're trying to do it. Mm-hmm. And then figure out and then you're basically doing what people do at a convention in real time when people actually show up. And that's right. The convention part is really, there's the part that gets TV aired. And then there's the part that actually people connect on the ground and they start to build networks and they start to strategize and they start to sort of like get a lay of the land. I'm very excited to talk to you about all that in the fun half today. Just a reminder, folks, this program relies on your support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. And also, I didn't want to get into this, but David Pakman is running away. First of all, the charges he's leveling are just enormous. I mean, the guy keeps saying over and over again, every time he talks about me, he says, he's a joke. He says that about me. And it's really offensive. But aside from that, I don't know what he's doing to grow his subscribers. But folks, subscribe to this channel. Tell your friends, subscribe to this channel. Because he's just running away with it. It's disgusting. It's disgusting what he's doing. It's disgusting. It should be, it's total deep state stuff. Anyways, become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, AM Quickie. David Pakman may have a lot of subscribers on his YouTube channel, but AM Quickie he does not have, and that thing is exploding. So check that out. You can go to amquickie.com, or you just find it as a podcast on any of your podcast servers, or you can watch it on our other YouTube channel, Majority Report Live. It is 7 minutes every morning. It's totally free, and you get your progressive news, and then you're set for the day, going deeper with everything else that you see on this program and Nomi's program, and also Matt's program. Matt, what's happening on your empire, your media empire?
Yeah, tonight on TMBS, Dustin Gastella joins us to discuss the post office, and also a kind of missed opportunity and capitalization of the Tennessee Valley Authority labor issues. On the right, there's sort of a right populist win there, and he's going to discuss that. There's an article in the Jacobin about it. Basically, they wanted to outsource some IT jobs, and some right-wing populists got in there with an anti-immigration play, and not good, folks. So yeah, tonight on TMBS, check that out, folks.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. This is Lee. I love you, CM, but you seem a little bitter about Pakman. Don't be the maror of your Seder. That's a good one. See you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird.
No way!
Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.